you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 247 of The Law Entrepreneur. Happy New Year, everybody. I'm Neil Tyra, your host once again. And today my guest is Cindy Ashton. Now, Cindy is a trainer, strategist, speaker, and award-winning TV host who is going to chat with us today about becoming a better presenter, tapping into your theatrical underpinnings, owing to her background in musical theater, and to show us how that we can dramatically grow our business and increase sales and influence in the legal market. Now, let's face it, attorneys are always presenting in some fashion or another, unless you deal exclusively in appellate work where it's just written. But whether or not we're speaking before a judge, a jury, a group of attorneys, or what have you, we always are mindful of the fact that our presentation skills are oftentimes our trade, how we practice our skills. So the reason I wanted to have Cindy on the program today is so that we can explore what ways might we improve upon that, and how can those skills translate concretely into some specific actions that we perform as practicing attorneys. So I could have spoken with Cindy all day. I finally had to cut it off because we were having so much fun. So I hope you enjoyed this as much as I did. Without any further delay, here's my friend Cindy Ashton. Cindy Ashton, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Hello, Neil. I am absolutely thrilled to be here.
Well, I don't know who's more excited, you or me, given the fact that, as we had mentioned, we both know that we have an interest in musical theater. So we'll try and stay on topic, but if we break into song and dance, I hope our audience understands. Can you tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today?
Yeah. So like your daughter, Neil, when I was in the womb, I knew I was going to be a singer, dancer, actor. So throughout my whole, I was training. And by 19, I was already working with Broadway directors and performers. And when I was in university doing my music and kinesiology degree, what was really interesting is that I got fed up with getting $5.88 an hour to bag groceries. And I thought, I'm going to end up with massive student debt. There's got to be another way. So I thought, well, I love to teach, and I was doing a concurrent degree in teaching. So I thought, maybe I'll place an ad in the Penny Saver and teach singing and piano and speaking lessons. And so I put an ad in the Penny Saver. Now I'm aging myself.
I was going to say, you're aging yourself by the reference to Penny Saver and $5.88 an hour, but that's okay.
Hey, listen, I love aging because I get wiser and hopefully more fabulous with age.
You're like wine.
I'm like fine wine. So I ended up getting my first 10, at the time we called them students. And what was really fascinating is that I fell in love with it. And eventually I let go of piano lessons, and eventually I let go of the singing lessons, and it became all presentation. And so it went from kids and a couple of adults to 10 years later, CEOs and executives and salespeople. It's been almost 25 years now, and I still love it. And I still have both careers. I still have my performing. I don't dance in my 40s anymore, but I still have my performing and my TV career. And then I also have my presentation business, and my whole world is around The Voice, and I love it, and it's awesome.
Well, one of the reasons that I sought you out and was happy to take the referral from our good friend, Ms. Daves, is that being an attorney is inherently a job of presentation. It's a job of communicating, whether it be to a judge, to a jury, to a mediator, to opposing counsel, to a potential client, to an existing client. It doesn't matter. We're always trying to communicate, oftentimes in the written word, but primarily through the spoken word. And it's not a skill set that's taught anywhere in preparation for the practice of law. So tell me a little bit about how an attorney under those circumstances would benefit from such training.
I think that's an excellent question, Neil. And I think there's two levels of it. The first is any type of lawyer, and we'll talk about litigators, which is the second one, but any type of lawyer is not taught, as you said, presentation or even sales. And in my opinion, I don't believe in learning a whole bunch of crazy sales tactics. To me, it's about having a deep connection, a deep relationship, and that goes to how are you presenting yourself. So it's so important for attorneys to, first of all, how are they differentiated? How are they different? You know, so Neil, you're an estate lawyer. How are you different than any other estate lawyer? How are you different than any other real estate lawyer? And so on. And then be able to communicate that message so you capture attention. So part of presentation isn't just body language and speaking voice, but it's the words that you use. And then the second piece is that when you are connecting with people, when you're prospecting, a big part of it is learning how to listen deeply, ask the right questions, but also trust your own power of bringing out you. And what I mean by that is that a lot of presentation training is very much stand here, read a script, pose here, be perfect, and do a speech effect. And that's very robotic and it's not human. If somebody is seeing a lawyer, they have a problem. They're already probably in an emotional state of some sort. So you have to have additional skills to not come across as
as an attorney
or right. Come across too polished, because that puts up a wall. People are already having a hard time, right? Or they're doing big business deals and they're stressed. So my approach to presentation is really about learning you to trust your own power and naturally get out a strong and resonant voice so that you come across as confident, but not aggressive. Because I find that most speaker trainers, because they don't have a background in musical theater and opera, they try to teach fake speech effects, which causes stress in the body, which causes the voice to become unnaturally aggressive. And if somebody is already intimidated to see a lawyer, they're probably not going to want to choose you if you're coming across that way. For example, there's many different voice and body language patterns that could turn off potential prospects.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because I think if you ask, I did a survey of the public and you ask them to comment on the presentation persona of attorneys as they perceive them, I think you're going to get back, you know, comments like slick, salesy, disingenuous. I think that's primarily how people in the public think of attorneys. So somewhere along the line, you know, the true value of them as a person is not getting across in their presentation. And clearly they're not connecting with who they are, you know, authentically.
You are 100% right, Neil. That is the perception. Just because I've been doing this for so long and I've had a lot of lawyers as clients, and the ones that end up doing really well are the ones who are willing to bring out their own personality. And, you know, what are your values? What are your interests? How are people connecting with you? People want to connect, especially since this pandemic started. We were already stressed before 2020. Now right. It's like, let's just 10x that stress. And so people are really extra sensitive, extra stressed, extra touchy. We need to be really, really about that connection. And, you know, it's interesting because when you learn to talk more about your values and your interests, people can feel your heart. I mean, that's one of the reasons, Neil, when I was reading your website and researching you before we met today, I was like, oh, why isn't he in New Jersey? Because I've got to do my will next year and da-da-da. Because I already knew, based on your bio, I was able to tell from your website that you weren't a stiff lawyer or a slick lawyer. You know, you talk about your wife off the bat and you talk about about your daughter. Like, you really get to know that person. And if I think about my own clients, interestingly, in my almost 25 years of doing this, 90% of my clients are dog owners or dog lovers. They're all world travelers. They're all spiritual, but not really religious. And it's not that I go around advertising that this is my client. I didn't even realize that was my client. But I'm a dog lover. I'm somebody who's deeply spiritual, but not necessarily religious. I love to travel. I've done a lot of philanthropic work. But a lot of people who are my clients connect with me on that level, and that builds trust. Because if people see lawyers as scary or slimy or salesy, you have that extra barrier of releasing that, of having to develop trust. And I truly believe that trustworthiness comes from what we just talked about in terms of interests and values and showing your heart and who you are, but it also comes across in your presentation style, in terms of voice, in terms of presence, really showing your true energy.
And being genuine, you know.
Imagine that.
Yeah, because I think what you're alluding to, or maybe not even alluding, you're illustrating, is that you attract people, generally speaking, who are like you.
Mm-hmm.
And so if your presentation persona is vastly different and not genuine as to who you really are, it's no surprise that the people who are going to be attracted to that individual aren't necessarily the same people who would be attracted to you genuinely.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I see this, you know, when I was litigating. You know, I never saw a better example than when I'm talking to opposing counsel, we're having a wonderful, friendly conversation. We might be disagreeing on a legal point. It's cordial, and we're treating each other as peers and respectfully. And as soon as the gavel goes down, the judge is in front of us, opposing counsel turns into a different human being. I'm like, well, where did that guy come from?
Right.
And who is he? And I remember to be being so disappointed in that. It didn't happen all the time, but it happened more than once. And I think that's the kind of thing that gives lawyers a bad name.
But anyway. You know, and I think that's a really, really good point, Neil. If you are not consistent in how you show up, that destroys trust. It's all, people will buy from you if they trust you. People don't buy from you because they need, you know, hand soap, for example. That wasn't a good example, but you know what I mean? They don't just buy, they buy from people that they know, like, and trust. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, I think we've made the comment before on the podcast that in large part, the public can't tell whether you're a good attorney or not when they first meet you. They assume you are. You're in business and you have a practice, so they assume you know what you're doing, but they immediately can make judgments about whether they know, like, and trust you from how you present. And I think getting in touch with that genuine understanding of who you are and how you come across is something that all attorneys can benefit from. So tell us a little bit about the kind of training program that you offer and how that would manifest itself in the sense of an attorney trying to tap into that.
Yeah. So this is going to be a little weird because you probably don't hear this out of other people's mouths. But the first thing I do when I'm with a client is I look at their stress levels and how that's affecting their body language. And the reason why is because when we are stressed out, or we are angry, or we are emotional about something, and that's not a judgment. We all go through emotional stuff. Those emotions end up stuck in our body. And then what happens is that stress, wherever it's stuck in your body, will directly influence your speaking voice, your body language, your presence, your energy. So for example, right now I'm breathing in the upper half of my lungs because I'm stressed out. And Neil, how is my voice coming across right now?
It's a little high-pitched, just a little, forceful.
Right. And that's going to turn somebody off. And for women, from a scientific perspective, when women don't drop their tone, when women are too high in their voices, it actually tunes people out, especially men. Men are opposite from dogs. Dogs hear super high overtones, which is why we hear Snoopy barking in the yard and we don't know what Snoopy's barking at. But, you know, so dogs hear super high overtones. Men don't. So it's really important.
I've been told that men don't hear a lot of things. That just may be in my house.
I'm going to surround this, so now you have a really good excuse. But, you know, it's interesting. Like, if you look at Margaret Thatcher, I was watching the movie The Iron Lady, and which is about her life. And there was a whole scene where she had decided that she'd want to be prime minister. And the first thing her advisor said is, "We need to change your voice," because she was like, "Hello, I am Margaret Thatcher," and she's all up here. Terrible, right? And so we don't realize. So that's one way that stress manifests. But then for other people, stress can manifest where they feel like they need to hide and they have more of a slouch. And when you have more of a slouch, then your voice gets quieter. And so you come across as unconfident and meek, which makes people not trust you that you're capable. So these are just a couple of examples of how stress manifests in your body and how it comes across. So the first thing that everybody should be doing, and the first thing that I'm working with my clients, is being aware of where their stress patterns are. For me, I hold it right in my shoulders and chest. Mm-hmm. And how is that coming across to people? Because once you have that awareness, then I give them exercises to release that stress. And usually just by doing that, their voices and their presence open up and they're so much more connected and able to be present and listen. And their voices are much more resonant without having to push the voice. It's kind of like magic, actually.
Let's talk about preparation too, yeah. Because, you know, being an actress, and I witnessed this firsthand, as you said, with my daughter, the level of preparation to learn a script is, you know, a talent that every actor and actress must have. I'm not certain that attorneys do the same level of preparation for their presentations, and they would be well advised to do so. Talk a little bit about how to prepare for a presentation or a speaking engagement or opening argument, or, you know, yes. Just because most of us kind of think it over, make a few notes, and wing it.
Yeah, I love this question because it's all in the preparation. And so I'm going to just do some parallels between the lawyer world and the acting world. So when we get a script in the acting world, we spend dozens and dozens and dozens of hours really analyzing the script, analyzing the different characters, analyzing what their deeper psychology is, what their deeper motivations are, and analyzing what our deeper motivations are and what our desires are, and finding out tactics and mapping out, like, we're literally like lawyers. We're having to map out tactics to be able to move the needle. So we've got the presentations, or if you're going into court, you need to think about who is the audience. So let me take those two different groups separately. So let's say that you're doing a presentation. Who is your audience? What is their deeper needs? Because, for example, people say, "Oh, I need to be more confident. I need to have more sales," or whatever. But the deeper need for them might not be that at all. It might be that they were abused as a child and they've never had their voice heard. I mean, Neil, when I work with people, stuff comes up from their childhood
Right.
So even though people come to me for presentation training, and while they do much better in business after, I always notice pretty fast that there's deeper motivations happening. And that's the same for a presentation. So you need to think about, who's that group? Who's that group of people you're speaking to? What is their deeper needs? So if you're speaking as a lawyer, for example, if you're doing a presentation in the community or virtually at this point, and the community is, let's say, of a certain culture or socioeconomic stature, they're going to have different needs than the people who are of a different socioeconomic stature, right, or a different race or whatever. And you want to start really understanding, what is their deeper psychology? What are their deeper motivations? What's happening in that community that's important to them? Because I see a lot of people have the same presentation over and over. So you need to look at your presentation and do those alterations, because if you want to make sales, you want new clients, it's essential that they feel that you understand them. At the end of the day, people need to feel seen and understood.
Yeah, it's not something I think that we always focus on initially. I think oftentimes we're thinking about the end result, not the end user. You know,
Good, Neil. That's it. And the truth is if you want the end result to have 5 new clients from this speaking engagement, you need to think about the end user. So when I'm developing a presentation with a client, and I want all of you to do this, I want you to, you know, say by the end of this talk, they are going to learn and bullet point 3 things out. Actually, give me one centering statement, what they're going to learn, and then the 3 top bullets underneath that. And then ask yourself, who is this group? What's their deeper needs? And you also have to remember, if the person is hiring you and paying you, you need to make the meeting planner happy and what's his or her needs. And then you have to find a way to marry those both. But if you start with that centering statement and then check yourself for what's their needs, what's this demographic, what's the end result that they need, then you, when you develop your content, you're going to be much more on point.
Let's turn our attention then to some concrete aspects of presenting and speaking. I think a lot of our audience are looking to expand their speaking opportunities. I know, particularly for people like myself, like an estate planning attorney, that's the primary methodology for how to educate the public in understanding the need to create an estate plan. So you want to get out there in front of the public. You want to do speaking engagements oftentimes, not every time, but oftentimes. And of course, again, in today's pandemic world, it's a little bit of a challenge. But talk to us a little bit about, what's the process that you see for enhancing your opportunities to speak before an audience?
Yeah, because you can still be doing virtual presentations right now.
Right.
There's a lot of that going on. So the first thing you want to start to do is do a brain dump of who's your ideal client. And like Neil, when I was on your website, I saw something about elders as one of your ideal clients, right?
Yep.
So if you have 3 or 4 different avatars or groups of types of clients that you work with, so you write down all the different types of groups that you work with, and then it becomes really easy. So if you're looking for elders, Neil, for example, what types of groups are you looking for? Rotary, and I saw that you belong to Rotary, so that's really smart. So you want to start to say, who are these people? If you do estate planning, but you have a specialty in small business owners, well, guess what? There's a million entrepreneur groups. There's a million small business associations. So you need to start to think about, what are those different types of people that you use? What are those niches that you serve? Google is your best friend. Just Google, you know, small business associations, San Antonio, for example, if that's where you live or if that's where you want to target. You want to look up Chamber of Commerce's, for example. You know, if you have a specialty in working with moms, if mom groups, like you might be somebody who loves working with moms, you might be a lawyer that's a young mom yourself and you relate to them. You know, start to think about, where are the different communities, where can you target them? So Google is literally your best friend. And the second thing you need to do is think about what your pitch is. Because if you're going, oh, I'm going to come in for estate planning, again, how does that differentiate you from other people doing estate planning? So I'm just using you, Neil, as an example, but estate planning for somebody who's an elder versus somebody my age, which is, I guess, middle-aged, versus somebody who's, you know, early 20s, is there going to be very different strategies, I'm guessing. I don't know.
Yes. You're quite right.
Right. So you need to once again go into the deeper psychology and the deeper needs and understand that demographic. Because when you reach out to a meeting planner, let's say you're reaching out to the Small Business Association, and you reach out and you find out, you look on the website and you see their virtual events coming up. First of all, you want to do research. It's like anything, less is more. I see people pitch for 100 speaking gigs and never get them. I would rather see you pitch for 10. And get them. So take time, shortlist 10, and take one at a time and do your research. Okay, so who was previous speakers? What were their topics? doing the research takes 5 minutes, literally five, maybe 10 minutes. And then you're able to reach out and say, hi, Janet, Neil here. You know, I'm curious to know what the process is to apply as a speaker. I noticed that in the last couple of months, you had this topic and this topic. Yeah. I was thinking to build on the topic you had in February with Carol. You know, elders today are really, oh no, we're in business people. Businesses today, because of COVID, are doing this. I would love to talk about how to still do estate planning when COVID's happening and business is uncertain, for example. Yeah. Does that make sense? No?
It does. And I'm wondering, should you have, I've called it, for lack of a better word, a cut sheet.
Yeah, a speaker one sheet.
A speaker one sheet, yeah. Explain what that is and how that's used in the process.
Yeah, so usually I start out light. So, you know, Neil, I'm Canadian and it's a very different culture than the US. And I've been living in the US happily. I love it here. It's amazing, but there is different cultural norms, sure, of doing business. And people don't realize that. So in Canada, we don't like salesy anything. We're very, very anti-salesy. Whereas Americans are very direct. And I'm actually really direct. So I'm this really interesting mix of being Canadian and American. So my approach is usually you do that initial, just what's your, you know, what I just, that little script that I just said. Right. If you want to be more direct, so the script I had just said is, you know, reaching out, wondering what your process is. I've noticed you've had this and this. This is what I do. Let me know what your process is. Like, I'm normally go more of the Canadian, very gentle route, not as direct. But if you want to be direct, be direct, you know, inquiring about your call to speakers, love that you had this speaker in the past. This is what I'm doing. And attached is my speaker one sheet. When can we set up a call? So that's more of the direct way of doing it. They both work. I would just use your intuition on the person.
Is there a difference if you're seeking, you know, paid engagement versus, you know, something that you're doing for free?
Yes. So yes and no. I mean, it's good to have a speaker one sheet. So on your one sheet, you want to have your top three, you know, what's that one statement of what you do? What's your top three talk titles, your bio, a couple of pictures, a couple of testimonials, any press logos you've had, you know, so that's what your one sheet looks like. Although I'm going to tell you that I've been a professional speaker for almost 25 years and I don't think I've ever used my one sheet ever.
Interesting.
But I'm also all about relationships. So people see me and then I get referrals and it's all relationship or people go to my website. So I just see people stop themselves from reaching out. This is why I'm telling you this. I see people go, I need to have a speaker one sheet. And then they spend 6 months trying to put together the perfect one sheet. Just connect with people. Connect with them. Connect, connect, connect. So in terms of paid versus unpaid speaking, yes, I've seen a lot of lawyers and have had lawyers and clients who go for the paid speaking. At this moment of this recording, because I'm always keeping my ear to the ground, webinars right now are paying, you know, the virtual stuff between $1,000 to $2,500. There, for the live speaking, there still is some. My agent is still pitching me and getting me pretty close to getting booked for, you know, fall of next year on a few, which is awesome. But she's like, don't expect your 10 grand. I'm like, what do you mean? Yeah. So talking to my manager, she's been telling me that even her $15,000, $20,000 speakers have had to go down to 5 to 10. Right. So the pricing is different at this point just because of what's going on. And because there's so little opportunities, meeting planners are going, finally, I don't have to pay these crazy fees. But, you know, if you are going to go out there and start asking for $2,500 or $5,000, you need to definitely up your game. You should always have really good headshots, but you definitely, you know, do the standard speaker one sheet because that is standard. I don't use them. I have one. I just don't use them because I get so many referrals or people see a video or something. But it's good to have the one sheet, but you also want to have footage of you speaking. And even if you're doing free talks, you need to have footage of your speaking. But especially for the paid stuff, the meeting planner, his or her reputation is on the line. You have to remember that if they don't choose the right speaker and the audience isn't happy, it's going to be hard for him or her to bring back that audience again the next month for their next speaker, for example. So there, you have to remember that their life is on the line, literally, or their job is on the line. So they're going to be wanting to see really good. They want to see good, solid clips of you speaking. Now, I see people go, oh, Cindy, I spent $10,000 on my sizzle reel, on my speaker reel. And then I look at it and I'm like, but you're barely speaking. But look at all the cutaways and look at all the press. And I'm like, it's all fluff. A meeting planner needs to know that you could speak. Like if you, like I'm a 10,000 plus speaker. And if you look at my speaker reel, it's not fancy, but you see me speaking. They actually need to see solid clips of you. So even if you don't put together a formal reel with several different clips, every time you go out and speak, you want to film that, you know, even just get a local kid from the film school to film it. It doesn't matter. And just be able to have 2 to 3 minute clips that a meeting planner can look. So I've got a clip of a 3 minute story where it's hilarious and I'm singing with the audience and the audience is laughing, but then I have another clip that I send that's very business and like, here's presentation skills and here I'm serious. So they want to see those clips. It's really important.
Today's episode is brought to you by the team at Spotlight Branding. For many years, lawyers like you have spent thousands of dollars on marketing campaigns that generate tons of leads, but often left many of them in the dust once the campaign ended. Spotlight Branding has found a better way. Their content loop system not only nurtures all of your leads and contacts in perpetuity, but it's done by pushing out quality evergreen content that elevates your credibility and helps the rest of your marketing efforts actually work. Spotlight Branding's content loop makes it nearly impossible for your network to forget about you, which means they'll think of you first when they or someone they know needs legal help. Spotlight Branding has turned hundreds of lawyers across the country into the go-to attorney in their community with their content loop by producing engaging content that speaks to your clients' needs and fears, and they can do the same for you. To get started, they're offering listeners of The Law Entrepreneur a free download that explains the content loop and how you can put it into practice in your law firm's marketing strategy. Just go to spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in The Law Entrepreneur, spotlightbranding.com/TLE to get your copy. Spotlight Branding, more referrals, better clients, higher ROI. Now, if you've been a listener of this podcast for any time, you know that I sing the praises of Ruby all the time because they're really responsible in my own practice for helping me grow my business, deliver personalized experience to my clients, you know, building customer loyalty, really, in terms of having a consistent front-facing office partner in Ruby, and allows me to stay connected anywhere, anytime to my business through their services. So I can't say enough about Ruby. I'm delighted to have them and continue to have them as a sponsor of this podcast. And this episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Daylight, the all-in-one contact relationship manager, or CRM. I've been using Daylight for well over 10 years now, and it's the best CRM for business on the Mac and iPhone. And despite having a case management platform that I'm very happy with, I still use Daylight to handle all of my many other law firm needs. When you're running your own law firm, it can be difficult to stay on top of follow-ups, keep track of details and communication, and stay aware of what needs to be done next on each project. Daylight organizes everything in one place, so you don't have to rely on your memory to keep it all straight. If you're feeling like it's time to upgrade from spreadsheets to a CRM, check out Daylight. You can download it from the App Store or visit www.marketcircle.com and try it free for 30 days. On top of that, you can get your first month free when you tell them you heard about Daylight here on The Law Entrepreneur. Daylight by Market Circle, staying top of mind without the stress. I just think that is so critical and so true and so not done in the legal community. Because look, I got my hand up. I'm raising my hand. I'm absolutely guilty of this. I've spoken at the Bar Association multiple occasions. I've never once had somebody film me do that. Now, the Bar Association's filmed it for presentation review at other times, but I've never done that. And I recognize, boy, am I missing out? Because I could have used those clips. to monetize that presentation in my advertising, in my marketing.
Yeah.
And
that's
another
reason why you want to do it. It's like, oh, Neil was invited to speak here.
Yeah. And I don't want to gloss over one other point that you mentioned. Again, most communities have a community college nearby. I almost can guarantee you there's an audio and TV department at that community college with students dying to have a project to work on.
Yep.
Back in a previous life, owned and operated a martial arts studio, as a lot of our listeners know.
Oh, and interesting.
I hosted a charity martial arts tournament back in the day. And I got the local community college to come and do all the video for it. And every student in that video class did a clip, actually a musical clip, because that was in the MTV era. They shot B-roll throughout the whole tournament and all put it to music. Of course, I couldn't use any of it because they didn't understand royalties for using somebody else's music. But it was, point is that if you are presenting to a bar association, a community group, get somebody with a steady hand or a tripod and an iPhone and film it.
Or just go on Amazon and just invest in a tripod for less than $50. And then, so then you could say
film
to your
friend or
that student, you know, to film it for you. So I'm 100% with you. We, you know, our phones are amazing. I remember a few years ago when I was filming my TV show, Cindy Uncorked, my camera guy, who's an Emmy Award winning like producer, who was doing the videography and directing, he had his PA, his production assistant. So we had the regular camera, and then his production assistant was using a Samsung S5 phone or S4, whatever that version was. And I said, "What are you doing?" He says, "You don't understand the quality on this phone." I said, "Are you seriously doing one of the angles on a professional like network TV show from a Samsung phone?" And he says, "Yup." And it was amazing. So if you actually see the footage of that episode, you're going to go, "That was from a phone."
Yep.
And it went on. It went on television.
And that's even and that's even more true today. You know, the new iPhone 12 is an example. Everybody knows I'm an Apple fanboy. The new iPhone 12, the video quality there is astounding. So, you know, video yourself doing the presentations is also a great rehearsal tool as well. Put that camera on a tripod and video yourself doing the presentation as a rehearsal, and you'll get a lot of feedback from that. I want to finish up in that regard to talk about the tsunami in legal marketing is video marketing these days. Everybody's doing video marketing. What advice would you have in terms of appearing on the camera for video marketing clips?
Yeah, so we'll talk about the technical and then we'll talk about the presentation part. So from a technical standpoint, the light has to be facing you. So even if you don't invest in a light ring or some kind of other lighting, then good old-fashioned lamp, take the lampshade off and put the lamp in front of your head. You know, just get yourself lit somehow. If you're filming outside, you need to have a wind protector. You can get those on Amazon. You want to listen to your audio. If you're having audio issues with your phone, or again, you're outside, you could be using a lavalier mic that hooks into your phone so it gets rid of the wind issue or even just gives you better sound. So it's really important, but even in terms of your space, we're still on the technical. I'm going to get to performance in a second. But in terms of your space, you need to be really careful that you don't have a bunch of clutter. Unless that's your image, it doesn't look good if you are filming from your office, for example, and you've got paperwork scattered everywhere and it looks like a bloody mess. And even if you have an organized background, if there's too many objects, even if they're organized, people are going to be too busy looking at all the stuff behind you as opposed to focusing on you.
I do that all the time. all the time, you know, particularly with the news programs these days that are having so many Skype and video interviews, I'm not listening to the person talking. I'm looking to see what books they have on their shelf, what knickknacks they have.
Yeah.
And so you're right. If there's one or two is okay, but if I spend the whole time reading your book list rather than listening to you.
That's a problem.
You're defeating your own purpose.
Right. And then the other thing is, let's talk about space. You want to make sure that you have about 3 feet behind you in general, because if you don't have space behind you, it makes you look squished up and it doesn't give you power on camera. But if there's space behind you, it gives you more power. For example, you also want to be eye level, because if you are not eye level and you're hovering over, you become intimidated. Or if you're too under, you look like you're weak. Now, the only time where you start to play with angles is if you're doing things for dramatic effect. And there are times where I do things that are a little bit more above the head for a specific dramatic effect that I want. But again, I'm a professional television person.
Right.
But for the average lawyer, keep yourself at eye line. Clothing. Please do not wear small patterns, because small patterns look fuzzy on camera. Don't wear velvet. You look fuzzy on camera. You want to make sure that you don't blend into the background. You want to make sure that anything you wear is going to be a nice solid cuddler or has big patterns that's not distracting. So you just want to just keep that in mind. You want to avoid too much of black or too much of white, but you just want to be able to pop on camera. So that's the technical side, Neil. Any questions about that before I go on to...
No, that's good. That's good.
Okay. Oh, and last technical thing, makeup, women go one or two steps above what you normally do. So if you like natural look, that's fine. Make it, step it up to a little bit more dramatic. If you like the dramatic look, step it up to a glam. So you got to step up the makeup, otherwise you're going to get washed out. For men, if you've got bald spots, powder your head. There you go. Okay. Let's talk about now and powder any oily spots. So let's talk about the performance piece. When you're looking at camera, it's very difficult because you're not actually talking to a person and you want to come across as warm and personable on camera. So what you want to do is, before you go on camera, take a moment just to close your eyes, take a breath, get grounded, and just imagine in your mind, who is somebody that you love and adore that would eat this information up and would be totally cheering you on? Get that person's face in your mind eye. And then ask yourself, what part of their face really lights you up? Is it their dimples? Is it their smile? Is it their eyelashes? Whatever that is. And then open your eyes. And when you look into the camera, you're seeing that dimple or you're seeing that nose is cute. And that is a acting technique called sense memory. It gives you the sense. So you're not trying to fake it on camera and going, I'm going to try to smile and look at the camera now. But what you're doing is you're filling yourself up with the emotion of somebody that you love, which makes you come across as softer and warmer and more engaging on camera. And when you're delivering to the camera, then you're literally imagining them in that camera. So it makes you more personable. So that's the first tip. Any questions about that, Neil?
No. And in fact, I know somebody who takes that just a little step further and has an object that reminds them of that person off camera. You know, so that they can reconnect with that if they feel, you know, the connection's waning.
Yeah. So the second thing you want to do is actually take the time to just stand, feel your feet, really feel them in the ground, take a breath in, exhale out nice and long. And you want to do that a few times. What the longer exhale to the inhale means is that you're stimulating your parasympathetic nervous system, which is your relaxation, because you don't want to be on camera like a stress ball. So if you take that 5 minutes before to move around, do some shoulder rolls, release all tension, feel your feet in the ground, take a breath in, exhale longer than your inhale, do that a few times, what ends up happening is that your mind slows down, so you're more focused and able to perform, you're calmer, you're much more open, and it also releases a stress from your voice, so your voice is more naturally resonant on camera.
And the great thing about video is to remember that you can redo it. You don't have, it's not a one take.
Right.
It's not a live shot.
Well, so. Right. It's not, you can redo it and go into it like, oh, I'm going to play and I'm willing to screw this up.
Yeah.
But the preparation is half of the problem, or half of what's going to make you great on camera. So you talked earlier, Neil, about, you know, what do we do with the bullet points, right? How do we go beyond that? Now, if you're doing a 2-minute little video, you don't need to do all that you know, you just need to get these bullet points out. But what I will say is know the flow. You don't have to have it memorized because that will make you more nervous trying to be word perfect. But if you're like, if your introduction is this, and then the middle part is this, and then the middle part is that, and the middle part is that, you want to run the formula in your head. So for example, I did a video the other day about if you have a vocal fry. So my opener, so if I was trying to memorize the flow, it'd be like, okay, a vocal fry will lose your sales. That's part one. Okay. Number two, what the heck is a vocal fry? Great. Number three, how could you fix a vocal fry? Or how does a vocal fry affect your sales? Four, how do you fix that vocal fry? Five, book a consult. So I've got those five parts. And then I just keep running in my head, right? Loses you sales, what it is, how it affects you, how you fix it, book a consult. And then I just run that boom, 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 boom. And I just run it and I walk it around the room until it's in my body. So when I'm on camera, I'm not stressed about what I'm supposed to say. I know the flow and I can just relax and just deliver.
And let it go. Well,
just let it go. Sorry.
Exactly. What a segue there. Points if you recognize the musical. Cindy, I could spend the rest of the afternoon chatting with you, but we've reached that point in time. This is a wonderful start for the new year. Tell our audience how they can touch base with you if they want to follow up with anything you've shared with us today.
Absolutely. Just go to Cindy Ashton Trains, like a train with an S.com. CindyAshtonTrains.com.
And we will have that in the show notes. And Cindy, I'm really delighted to have you on the program today. I can't wait to meet you in person at some point.
Yes,
and,
that would be lovely.
And carry on this conversation. So once again, thanks for taking the time to be with us today on The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you for having me. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Well, there you have it, Law Entrepreneurs. Thanks for being with us today and with this episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I want to thank our sponsors, as usual, Ruby Receptionists, Daylight, and Spotlight Branding. Make sure you swing on by our website at thelawentrepreneur.com or visit our Facebook page or Twitter account. You can find us anywhere by just searching on The Law Entrepreneur. Also, if you'd be kind enough, I'd love it if you could go to your podcast application and leave us a rating and a review. It helps with our visibility and it helps ensure that we're there to be found when people come looking for podcasts in the legal space. So once again, thanks for being a part of today's episode of The Law Entrepreneur.